Awareness Week, and we have a huge problem with eating disorders in Ireland, and it's kind of, in many ways, it's the unspoken about problem. You don't talk too much. We talk about alcoholism, we talk about drugs, and we talk about all the other things, but eating disorders are serious too, and they don't always get talked about as much as they should. And the purpose of this week, not just in Ireland, but globally, is to talk about eating disorders. They'll be focusing this week, in particular, I think, on the role of the dentist as well. There'll be leaflets being handed out and awareness, because sometimes the dentist who'll pick it up and notice that something isn't right about a person's teeth. So that there's a focus of that all this week, and the events and the schedule is being launched as we speak out at CIT. But I'm good to say that I have Trish Shields from the Cork Eating Disorder Centre on the phone to talk to us about the week and about eating disorders and what we have, how we deal with them in this country. Hi, Trish.
Morning, PJ.
Nice to talk to you. Awareness is the key, is it not, with regard to eating disorders? But that statement even gives me rise to my first question.
Mm-hmm.
Young people in particular, but anybody with an eating disorder, part of it is they become extremely good at concealing it from us.
Absolutely, yeah, that is right. I suppose the thing to say there is when somebody develops an eating disorder at the beginning, they may not even be aware themselves that they have it, and therefore their capacity for insight or motivation to change is compromised there. They're actually not aware that they have it. And if they are aware, then because it's such a coping tool, they try to hide it. So that is why we would be saying early intervention is key and catching it earlier.
For a loved one, are there, or a friend even, or a colleague, are there things that we can watch for?
Sure, of course, yeah. For instance, weight loss, that's a straightforward one. Refusal to eat certain foods, maybe. Getting up from the table after eating, going to the bathroom, that might be a recurring theme that one would notice. Isolating from friends, becoming more moody or down in oneself. Exercising a lot more, becoming aware of food labels, perhaps. That sort of thing. So a change really in the person's personality and behaviours.
The word you used there is change, because I guess, Trish, you know, in this modern world that we're in now,
yeah,
health and fitness is important to so many people. More people are exercising, more people are running, more people are watching their diet more carefully than they ever did before.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly normal behaviour. So someone with a disorder can, if you like, hide in plain sight for a while.
Absolutely, that's a good way of putting it. They can hide in plain sight. And because it can be such a functional illness, people could be working, college, school, living what appears to be a normal life, then it certainly can hide in plain sight. And that is why we need people who are primed to notice the early signs of it. Because we know with the early signs, it will reduce, speed up recovery, number one. It will reduce the long-term effects of the illness, which is both mental and physical. So vital that it's caught at the earlier stages. Exactly, so that it is there in plain sight. So knowing what to look for is really, really important. So raising awareness about that and people understanding that more and more. The other thing is realizing the seriousness of eating disorders. And we need, as a culture, I suppose, to move out of a phase of a place of thinking perhaps they're a phase or they're just a young girl's thing, even though we've talked a lot about this, but that still is a stigma for many people.
Yeah.
And so moving away from that is so important.
I'll talk in a sec about the treatment regimes that are there and maybe problems with access, but just for the friend, the loved one, the parent, the colleague, if you do notice that someone's behaviours are changing, and if someone's behaviour is giving you cause for concern, do you confront them? Do you sit them down and say, I'm worried about your eating habit or habits?
Okay. So I think if there's anybody out there listening and thinking, what would I do if I saw my child? I think the first thing is to not rush in, really, right there and then, but to not leave it long either. I'm not suggesting that, but to get information on it, to become aware before talking. But the most important thing is to be kind and compassionate about it, not to start blaming the person, because it'll just isolate and alienate them more. So how it's done is very important, the approach. But yes, it's important to approach the person 100%, but how it's done is even more important, so that the person isn't pushed further back into the illness.
Yeah. And that's something we'd all have to think very long and very hard about before you tackle someone.
Yeah, we
have to, even tackle is the wrong word, maybe suggest it to someone.
Exactly. How we approach it is really very important, because the thing is, if somebody is told today, I think you might have an eating disorder, first thing is, if this is the early stages, they will completely and utterly disagree with that. Very likely they will disagree with it. Maybe not everyone, but the majority of people would probably disagree with that, because we have to remember that, one, it's not a choice, and we say that all the time, it really is not a choice, and the person thinks whatever's going on for them is a coping tool. It feels and is a coping tool for them at that moment, so it's like you wanting to take it away. They may feel threatened. So how we go about it is really important. We need to remember the person doesn't have the same insight as we would have. They're blinded to the effects of what's happening for them.
And that's, they're being controlled by the disorder, I guess.
Correct, exactly, PJ, yeah.
Once we get past that stage and there is a diagnosis, Trish, how good or how bad, shall we say, are the treatment options and facilities in the Ireland of 2018?
Well, currently, the facilities and the treatment centres that would be needed are not there, really, at the level that they're needed. But that's definitely the truth. But the other reality is, you may know that recently the HSE have brought in new treatment plans for eating disorders that they plan to roll out between 2018 and 2019, one for child and adolescent and one for adult mental health. Now, that is certainly welcomed. The plans for that are certainly welcome, and we hope that the rollout of that will be effective and efficient, you know.
Mm. Like, does that mean more beds, more trained professionals? What does it mean?
What it means is that there are going to be four hubs around the country, say Cork, Galway, Limerick and Dublin, and they would have so many beds per hub. For the public, yes, and also for child and adolescent as well. That's the plan. That is what I've read the plan to be.
We constantly hear of people having to go to the UK or having to take a loved one to the UK,
yeah,
because the facilities aren't here.
Yes, that's true.
Not acceptable in 2018.
No, absolutely. No, yes, we do hear of that, and I've heard of other people having to go to Europe even. So, yes, it's very welcomed. Any treatment for eating disorders, the improvement in resources is welcomed. The other thing I suppose is welcomed is an acknowledgement by the state bringing in those treatment plans for eating disorders, is an acknowledgement of the population of people who are suffering with eating disorders and bringing them out of the shadows, as it were, saying, look, these people exist, because for too long it has gone under the radar. And now at least it's being acknowledged that there's a population of people that need serious treatment, and that the state is taking that seriously.
I heard another discussion on another radio show a few weeks ago about a woman who called in to tell the presenter, I'm really, really suffering with my eating disorder. I need treatment,
and
I need it quickly, but I can't get in anywhere. So here's someone in a dire state, wants to get in somewhere, knows desperately that this condition is going to severely injure or kill them,
exactly,
but can't get in anywhere. How prevalent is that?
That woman potentially may have been quite extreme in her eating disorder. So if she needed hospitalisation and didn't have, say, private health insurance or something like some sort of health insurance to get into a private bed, then it would be high. Yes, there would be a prevalence of those people out there, high percentage of people like that there, definitely. Yeah.
Something we talked about on this program a number of times in the past is a dual diagnosis. That is, if you have something else going on as well as your eating disorder, then there seems to be nowhere for you to go.
What we would normally say to that is if somebody is approaching us, for instance, with treatment and they have a drug or alcohol addiction, we would say that that addiction needs to be treated first. Because you might find that actually the eating disorder is the primary problem.
Yeah.
And that once the alcohol is sorted or the drug addiction is sorted, then the eating disorder needs to be worked with.
Right.
Okay? So
so that someone, for example, who has both an eating disorder and, for example, an alcohol addiction, are you suggesting that in order to properly tackle the eating disorder, you need to bring the drinking under control?
Absolutely, yes, yes.
Now, that's much easier said than done.
It is, 100%.
Getting into alcohol treatment can often be as difficult.
Right, yeah, probably. I'm not aware now of the alcohol treatment centres so much and the resources there.
Like, is there a case to be made, Trish, is the question I'm asking, is there a case to be made for beds and facilities to be available for those who have a dual issue going on?
Oh, ideally, that would be wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. But the thing with an eating disorder, we don't actually see it as an addiction. We see it having addictive qualities, addictive parts to it. But you can't give up food. So you have to make peace with food.
Yeah.
So the treatment model would be different in that sense. They might be similar, obviously. There's a lot of similarities, but they would be different.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Drink is killing me, but I have to eat.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Are we on top of this problem, Trish, or is it one that we will one day look at it and say, God, we never knew it was that bad? Are we on top of it?
I actually think we have a lot of learning to do about eating disorders. I really believe that. I suppose here at the centre in Cork, we see an increase this year of people coming into us. There's a 26% increase in the number of therapy sessions offered this year. And then the number of family support saw an 18% increase. So with that, I suppose what we're seeing is that if resources are available, people will begin to pick them up and will start to use them. Are we doing enough? Do we know enough? No, absolutely not. I think that eating disorders are unique in that they have serious medical complications with them, leading to death even. So organ failure, osteoporosis, and many, many other things physically. So it's a mental and physical condition, really. It manifests in both physical and mental characteristics. So we need to really understand. We need to understand the type of person who develops an eating disorder and maybe learn from a very young age the things to look out for.
Very good. Thanks for your time today, Trish.
Okay. Thank you, PJ. Thank you very much for having us on.